A reading from Ruth, chapter 4, verses 13 through 17. It can be found on page 244 of the Old Testament in your pew Bibles, also on the screen. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. When they came together, the Lord made her conceive, and she bore a son. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without next of kin, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has borne him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her bosom and became his nurse. The women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." They named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse, the father of David. Amen.
Before I begin preaching, I want to take a moment. As you know, there's an event happening June 30th in my life, and to prepare for that, there are a lot of things going on, but one thing I wanted to do, several things I'm going to be doing with you in worship from now to then, but one thing is I want to honor some people who've been very important in my ministry, and those are educators and clergy who've been a part of this work with me and have shared that work. So from now off and on until that last Sunday, they are serving as liturgists, and Patty is the first one to serve in that capacity today, what I'm calling an honorary liturgist, so I can take a moment to thank her. For those of you who were not here back two decades ago, from 2001 to 2012, Patty served as our Minister of Education. So she was with us for 11 years serving in the capacity, this kind of work that mostly Pastor Kelly's doing with us now. She was a creative force, a wonderful innovator. Her preaching is incredible, if you've heard that. She's done some unusual things. You can ask her about some of the unusual things she's done in her preaching here. Currently, she has gifted us with our Facebook. And if you're on our church Facebook, all of that, you can thank Patty for doing that. It's an incredible way to get the word out about the church, and thank you for all of that ministry. And today we're live streaming, so we have a whole group of people with us out there in virtual reality or not sitting on the pews with us, enjoying this worship experience. And that's all because of Patty. So our church has expanded in ways that we cannot even imagine, and we sit here and don't even think about on Sunday morning, that we have a whole other church out there worshiping with us, and thank you for that ministry and for being you and being such an important part of my life. So in 2 weeks' time, it's Easter. You don't need me to tell you that. You know that already, and your calendars tell you that. And you're probably already starting to think about the day and how you will celebrate. And for some of us, we'll gather with our biological families. The extended family may gather. They may gather at your home, or they may gather at someone else in the family's home. And you'll be there with, you know, mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and children and grandparents and the whole kit and caboodle, whoever it might be. But for some of us, that's not our reality, and it's never our reality, and that's never the reality in my family life. When we gather for holidays and celebrations of life, we don't gather with our biological family. We gather with what I have come to call our logical family. So don't clap, it's not my idea. There's actually a book called Logical Family. It's a memoir written by Armistead Maupin. Some of you will know Maupin. He's best known for his series Tales of the City. But as a gay man, he wrote about how he had been rejected by family of origin and had, in his own life and development, realized he had pulled in all these other people into his life who were supportive and loving and accepting and became part of his life's journey. And so he called them his logical family. So on Easter, wherever you'll be at your celebration, at our house, our logical family will form. It's a group of gay men who will come, and they're there for three various different representations. Some are there because they're clergy and they can't go home geographically to be with family on holidays. Some are there because they are not welcome at their biological family tables. And some of them are there simply because they have outlived their biological families and they have no kin left. So we raise a toast and welcome the logical family and we have our celebration. But don't think this is something that's just been created. The story you read in the book of Ruth is about the creation of a logical family. So let me tell you the backstory for those of you who don't remember 2 years ago when we, in the season of Advent, went through the whole book of Ruth. You might not remember the nuances of the story, and it will help to understand the small piece that we read today. It centers around not Ruth, but a woman named Naomi, who is her mother-in-law. Naomi and her husband lived in Bethlehem, yes, that same city of Jesus' birth, but this is much earlier than that Bethlehem story. And as often is the case for people who make their living in agriculture, you have to deal with challenges. And there were always challenges with drought in the Middle East. And there was a period of time at which there was a drought in and around the area of Bethlehem. Crops failed, you couldn't make a living, and people had to move elsewhere. So Naomi and her husband and her two young sons moved to a foreign land, the land of Moab, to live among the Moabites, and there her children grew up. It was still, at that time, bad harvest going on in Bethlehem. They couldn't go back home. They had to stay where they could make a living. In time, her two sons marry. They marry women named Orpah and Ruth. And then in time, Moab has a drought. Crops fail. Bethlehem is now doing well agriculturally, so it's time to move back home. But what has happened in the drought in Moab, it's caused people to die off, and part of that tragedy has struck Naomi's home. In our grief business today, the Bible doesn't use this term, but she experiences complicated grief. Eve's shaking her head. She knows exactly what I'm talking about from this work we do. Complicated grief is when you have a lot of loss thrown at you at once. So not only is she seeing her livelihood lost, because of the drought, she's lost her husband and she's lost her two sons. And in that day and that economy, that's disastrous for women because unfortunately your livelihood depends on having some male figure in your life taking care of you and providing for you. If it wasn't a husband, it would be a brother or a father or some other male member of the family. So here are these three women all of a sudden dealing with such intense grief. Everything they've had has been wiped out, and if they're going to survive, something's got to give. So we're told in the story that Naomi goes to her two daughter-in-laws and basically says, it's time for you to go back home. Return to your families of origin and let them take care of you, because that's how you did it back then. And she was going to go back and return to Bethlehem and see if her family of origin would take her in. So her first daughter-in-law, Orpah, kisses Naomi goodbye and goes on her way and returns to her family of origin. But Ruth does not. Ruth is adamant that she's going to form a new family with Naomi. She's not going to just let her be on her own. So this is truly one of these Lenten redemption stories that we're looking at in this season of Lent. The redemption figure in this story is Ruth and what she does for her mother-in-law. It is pretty amazing. But Naomi realizes this is just going to be difficult for Ruth. To go start a new life in a new land where people don't know her, she would be better off back home with her family. But Ruth is adamant. Earlier in the book of Ruth, she says these words that you may have heard before. It's probably the best known part of the text. I believe it's in chapter 2. Ruth said, "Do not press me to leave you or to turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God shall be my God. Where you die, I will die." With those most famous words out of the entire Old Testament book of Ruth, Naomi, who now thought she had no future, all of a sudden realizes through Ruth's presence that she has a future. So these two women pack up, leave Moab, they go back to Judea, to Bethlehem. They're welcomed in by Naomi's family. Naomi has a cousin named Boaz, and in time Ruth and Boaz fall in love. She remarries. They have a child. They name him Obed. You saw all the family lineage there at the end of the script. And then he goes on to father Jesse, and Jesse is the father of David. We're talking about King David of Israel there, and you know all of the Jesus genealogy is that he is fulfilling the line of King David. So Ruth, and I'm going to tell you, Naomi, become great, 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 great something, how many ever generations there are, grandmothers of Jesus. And in the text, what's incredible, what you heard Patty read today, is how Naomi is brought into the family. She was not the birth mother. She's the mother-in-law of Ruth. But they acknowledged that this child was born for her. The women of Bethlehem gave her a blessing and said, "This is your child." This is not a child for Naomi that was created out of biology, but a child that is created out of love. So the point of this text is we are connected as children of God and as brothers and sisters of Jesus, not biologically, but out of love. That is the creation of the first logical family. And so there's a message for the church here, I think. And when I use that word, I'm talking about the big C today, churches all over. Because I actually think Altadena Community Church has done a better job than most churches out there of kind of expanding their vision of what family should be and can be. But not all churches are there. You know, there was a model that most of us grew up in the 1950s and even into the 60s. You saw it on all your television shows, the model American family of 1950. Remember Ozzie and Harriet? They tried to give you the model American family, and the norm was then set against that. And 88% of American households in 1950 looked like mom and dad, two kids, the dog, the picket fence, you get it all. 50 years later, in 2000, that statistic dropped 20%. They predict by another 50 years, so 100 years from 1950, and some of us in the room might be around for 2050, it's going to drop another 20%. And by that time, less than half of American families will maintain that 1950 normative look. But we're all still living in family settings, so what's happened? We're all living in different ways, different configurations. The time of extended families living together just doesn't happen anymore. So we've had to learn to find new families and ways to form them. I'm going to share a back of a book jacket about a book written by a sociologist on family life today and her research. Her name is Bella DiPaolo. She wrote a book called How We Live, and she went around the country interviewing families and what family life was like. This is what it said on the back of her book. "I traveled the country talking to people about the people who were most important in their lives. I met single mothers who lived together to share the burdens and the joys of child rearing. I met older friends who share a home as well as meals and chores and stories. Think there of the Golden Girls sitcom. I met committed couples who have chosen to live apart. I met parents who partnered to raise kids but keep their own relationship platonic. I met a single mom with a daughter who bestowed 12 godparents upon her daughter. You see, there are different types of families. But the church, unfortunately, seems to be stuck thinking there's just that one model. You just do some internet search sometime when you have free time on churches around you in the area and see what their media platforms present. I was looking at one yesterday that somebody was talking about in a neighboring community that had changed its name, and they were asking me if it had changed its affiliation, and I said, I don't know, let's go online and see what we can learn. It was all traditional family photos. That's what that church was trying to promote, and most churches are still doing that, and we're missing half the market when that's our vision and our programming. We need to be open to the new realities that are in our midst if we want any kind of vitality out there in our community. If you expect people to come to church, you better create some programs that meet their needs and model their lives. Not doing stuff we did in 1950, thinking that those families are going to come flooding in because those families don't live out there in 2019. And that's what we need to remember. God has given us a gift to be able to say, create your own family around you. If your biological family, or what's often called the family of origin, is not there, it's no longer present, or it's not like it used to be, you don't have to be lonely, you don't have to be isolated, you don't have to be by yourself. You can create your own logical family, or what sometimes is called a family of choice. This Easter, if you have room at your table, you might think, who could I include that might enjoy coming and being a part of my celebration? A lot of people don't like to go out socially and have a meal by themselves or go to a movie by themselves or a concert by themselves, and so they don't. And they stay home and they stay isolated. There's a lot of that going on in today's world. Reach out and invite some people to go along with you. Say, anybody like to go out for dinner Friday night, or, you know, go to happy hour on Saturday, or check out this latest film? I want to go see it. If anyone wants to come, we're going, you know, Tuesday at 3:00, come and be a part of it. I was in a retirement center having dinner on Friday evening, and they were wise enough, because there's still a lot of coupled people living in that senior setting. They have a big sign on two long tables, and they say single seating. And if you just want to come eat with some people and not have to be by yourself, you just take a seat at that table and you join in the fellowship and the crowd. That's the kind of creativity that is needed by people to form logical families, so that we can feel that goodness of the community that comes from being together. I'm convinced God never created us for isolation. If you read the scriptures, it's all about forming community. That's how God works in families, not in individuals. Find your family. Cherish your family. Broaden your welcome in your family. And you will find the greatest blessing there is. Amen.